Oh, yeah.
When Fargo woke up the next morning, he saw that he was in one of the rooms upstairs over Big Kate's saloon. There was a whore sleeping beside him, and as he looked at her in the harsh light of day, he marveled at how different she looked now from the way he thought she looked last night. There was a large and disfiguring scar on one cheek. She's missing three teeth, and her breasts were misshapen and laced with blue veins.
Damn, how'd you get so ugly so fast? I must have been pretty damn drunk last night.
Turning the covers back, he stepped out on the floor, put on his hat, and then totally naked except for the hat, walked over to the window and looked at the back of the building behind the saloon. Feeling the need to urinate, he lifted the window and let go, watching as a golden arc curved down. At that moment, the door to the room opened, and Ford came in.
Son of a bitch! I seen him! I seen him when he come out of the sheriff's office!
What? You seen who?
I seen the fella that killed old Dooley.
You seen Kirby?
Yeah, I seen him. Only his name ain't Kirby.
What do you mean his name ain't Kirby?
I mean his name ain't Kirby because it's Jensen. He's the same fella that we put Logan's shirt on. Smoke Jensen, Dooley said his name was then. You recollect him, don't you, Fargo? He's a big man.
Yes, I recollect him, all right. But how do you know he's the one that killed Dooley?
Well, he's the one they give the reward for doing it. They was talking about it downstairs, how Kirby was going to get a reward for the sheriff this morning. That's why I went down there, so I could see what he looked like.
You went down to the sheriff's office?
Yeah, I was out working this morning while you was in here laying up with the whore.
Well, you had her first. If you hadn't been so tight about it, we could have each had our own whore instead of sharing one.
She's still asleep?
Yeah, she's either asleep or passed out.
And she did drink a lot last night.
Well, she couldn't have drunk as much as we did. Otherwise, we wouldn't have brought her up here. Did you get a look at her? She is one ugly woman.
Yeah, well, me and you ain't exactly what you would call good looking. Damn, Fargo, are you just going to stand there naked all day?
Yeah, I guess I better get dressed.
You know what I don't understand? I don't understand what Jensen's doing here. How come he ain't in jail?
Well, he must have broke out.
Yeah, well, that's the trouble with jails these days. Hell, a citizen can't even count on them to keep the outlaws locked up.
Are you sure it was Jensen you saw?
Yeah, I'm sure. And if you don't believe me, you can see for yourself. He's downstairs right now. But you better hurry, because he ain't going to be there long.
Well, how do you know?
Because I heard him asking someone how to get to Bertrand.
Bertrand, you said?
Yeah.
That's where the Logans was going.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. You reckon Jensen is going after them?
Well, of course he is. Damn. You know what I think the son of a bitch is doing?
No, what?
Well, what he is planning on doing is running us down and killing us one at a time.
For revenge?
Well, probably some revenge. But more than likely, it's to get his hands on the money that we stole.
Damn. That means he plans to kill us, don't it?
Yeah. Unless we kill him first.
How are we going to do that? We can't just walk downstairs and shoot him where he's sitting.
No, but if he's going to Bertrand, we can set up an ambush along the way.
As Smoke rode out of Dorena, he thought about the reward money he had received from killing Ebenezer Dooley. $500 was still quite a way from having enough money to pay off the note on his ranch, but it was a start. If there had been a reward for Dooley, maybe there was a reward on the others. If each of them was worth $500, hell, finding them all would be worth $3,000. And $3,000 would not only pay off the note on his ranch, it would give him a little operating capital to start the next year with. Smoke had never been a bounty hunter and never even considered it. But this was a different situation from hunting men just for the bounty. He needed to find each of these men in order to prove that he was innocent of the bank robbery in Etna. On the first night on their way back to Sugarloaf Ranch, Sally, Pearly, and Cal made camp on the trail. They found a place next to a fast-flowing spring of clear water where there was abundant wood for their fire and grass for the horses. Cal had gathered the wood, Pearly had made the fire, and now Sally was cooking their dinner.
Whatever are you laughing about?
I was just thinking of the way you had the deputy all trussed up and gagged like that.
Yeah, what was real funny was the way the marshal was laughing at it. He said Smoke done the same thing to him.
Did the same thing.
Yeah, but you have to admit, whether he done it or he did it, it was funny. Especially you doing it, too.
He had such a dejected look about him that I almost felt sorry for him.
There ain't nothing no better than bacon and beans when you're on the trail. Sure makes a body hungry.
Cal, you are incorrigible. What you mean is there isn't anything better than bacon and beans.
Yes, ma'am, I reckon that's what I meant.
And when have you not been hungry?
Yeah, well, you're right about that, Miss Sally. But there ain't, isn't anything any better than bacon and beans cooked on the trail.
Except maybe bear claws. Too bad you can't make us a batch of them out on the trail.
Well, maybe I will make some tomorrow night.
That would be...
Help me! Somebody!
What was that?
Help me!
Can anyone see him?
Who is it? Who's out there? Answer up! Who's out there?
Don't shoot! I ain't got no gun!
Come toward the camp. Come slow and with your hands up in the air so we can see you as you come in.
I'm coming.
The three campers looked toward the sound of the voice until a man materialized in the darkness. As he came toward them, he kept his hands raised over his head just as Pearlie had ordered.
That food sure smells awful good. It's been near a week since I've had anything other than some roots and bugs.
Who are you?
My name's Yancey, ma'am. Buford Yancey.
You can put your hands down, Mr. Yancey. You are welcome to some of our beans.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. It's mighty decent of you.
What happened to your horse?
He stumbled and broke his leg. I had to put him down.
How'd you do that? You don't have a gun.
Oh, well, I lost my gun. It must have fell out of my holster. If you don't mind, I'm going to go over there and get me a drink of water.
Yancey went over to the side of the stream, lay on his stomach, stuck his mouth down into the water, and drank deeply. A few minutes later, Sally took the food off the fire and then distributed it to the others. Pearlie noticed that she took less for herself than she gave anyone else. After they'd eaten, Pearlie found a moment to talk to Sally without being overheard.
Miss Sally, what you aim to do about this man?
Do? What do you mean, what do I aim to do about him?
What I mean is, he's eaten. Don't you think it's time to send him on his way?
Look at the man. He's half dead. We can't just send him away.
Well, what you plan to do with him?
I don't know exactly. As far as I know, the closest town is still Etna. I guess we should take him back there.
That'll make it 2 extra days before we get back to the ranch.
I realize that, but it can't be helped.
So that means you're going to let him spend the night here with us?
Pearlie, I told you we can't just run him off.
I don't like it. There's something about him I just don't trust.
I'll tell you what. We can take turns staying awake all night. That way someone will always be watching him. Do you think that would make you feel better?
Yes, ma'am. I think that would be a good idea.
All right. I'll take the first watch. I'll stay awake until midnight. You take the second watch from midnight to 4, and we'll get Cal to take the watch from 4 until dawn.
You know what your problem is, Miss Sally? Your problem is you're too decent to people. Your first notion is just take everyone at their word. That hasn't been my experience.
Pearlie.
Sally put her hand on Pearlie's shoulder and gently shook him.
Pearlie!
What?
It's your time on watch.
Oh,
don't blame me. You said we shouldn't trust our visitor, remember?
Oh, yes, ma'am, I remember.
Pearlie sat up and then reached for his boots. He nodded toward Yancey, who was wrapped up in a spare blanket.
Has it been quiet?
Sleeping like a log.
It don't seem...
It doesn't seem.
Yes, ma'am. It doesn't seem fair. He gets to sleep all night. Well, we have to take turns looking out for him.
Don't forget to wake Cal at 4.
During Pearlie's watch, he sat very still, just listening to the snap and pop of the burning wood. For the first hour, he stared into the fire. He looked at the little line of blue flame that started right at the base of the wood, watching as the blue turned orange, then to yellow, and finally twisting ropes of white smoke as it streamed up from the fire. Orange sparks from the fire rode the heat column high into the night sky, where they added their tiny red glow to the blue pinpoints of the stars. Pearlie didn't know when he fell asleep, but he did know when he woke up. He woke up when he heard the metallic click of a pistol being cocked. Opening his eyes, he saw Buford Yancey standing in front of him, holding a pistol that was pointed directly at him.
Figured if I stayed awake long enough, I'd catch one of you asleep.
Where'd you get the pistol?
Yancey pointed to one of the two bedrolls.
That boy over there had it lying on the ground alongside him. It wasn't hard to get. No harder than it's going to be for me to take one of them horses.
You don't need to do that. Miss Sally was planning on us taking you into Etna tomorrow. She figured you'd get back on your feet there.
Ha! Now that would be a fine thing, wouldn't it? For you to take me back into Etna after I just robbed a bank there a little more than a week ago.
You? You're the one who robbed the bank?
Yeah, me and some pards. Only they ain't much my pards now. They stole my share of the money from me.
Was one of your pards Smoke Jensen?
Who? No, he ain't. Wait a minute. I think Jensen was the name of the fellow we put Kurt's plaid shirt on. At least, wise, that's what Dooley said his name was.
So you admit you framed him?
Slick as a whistle.
Thank you, Mr. Yancey. I will expect you to tell Marshal Turnbull that.
What the hell?
Yancey spun around quickly, only to see Sally holding her pistol on him.
Drop your gun.
You think I'm gonna quake in my boots and drop my gun just because some woman's holding a pistol on me? Why, you'd probably pee in your pants if you even shot that thing. Why don't you just hand that over to me before you hurt yourself?
Sally fired, and the tip of Yancey's little finger turned to blood and shredded flesh.
You shot my finger off!
Just the tip of it, and I chose the little finger because I figure you use it less. It could be worse.
You trying to tell me that you aim for my little finger? That it was no accident that you hit it?
Miss Sally always hits what she aims at.
Get over there and sit down.
Miss Sally, I'm sorry about this. I must have fallen asleep. Next thing I knew, he was holding a gun on me.
It's all right. I'm sorry I didn't pay more attention to you. You said there was something about him you didn't trust. It turns out that you were right.
Ford lay on top of a flat rock, looking back along the trail over which he and Fargo had just come.
Do you see him?
Yeah, he's back there, coming along as big as you please. He's trailing us, Fargo. I mean, he's sticking to us like stink on crap. We can't get rid of him.
I don't want to get rid of him.
What do you mean you don't want to get rid of him? You said yourself that you thought he was tracking down every one of us to kill us.
Why did I suggest that we come through Diablo Pass? It's 20 miles farther to Bertrand this way than it would have been by going through Mackenzie Pass.
I thought it was to throw him off our trail.
No, it was to get him to come through here. I can't believe the son of a bitch was dumb enough to take the bait. We're playing him like he'd play a fish.
If you say so.
Think about it, Ford. This is a perfect place to set up an ambush. I'll stay on this side of the pass, you go on the other side. When he gets between us, we'll open up on him, we'll have him in a crossfire.
Why do I have to go over the other side? That means I've got to climb down, go over, and then climb back up.
Want the money he took from Dooley, don't you?
Yeah.
Then just do what I tell you without all the belly aching.
All right. But after all this trouble, he better be carrying that money with him is all I can say.
He's got the money. Couldn't be anywhere else. But even if he didn't have it, we'd have to kill the son of a bitch before he killed us, remember?
Yeah, I remember. All right, I'll go over to the other side.
Well, get a move on. Looks like he's coming along pretty steady.
Smoke had noticed the hoof print shortly after he left Arena. Because he had identified each set of prints from his original tracking, he recognized these prints as belonging to two of the bank robbers. Smoke was actually going to Bertrand to follow up on Dooley's declaration that two of the robbers had gone there. He hadn't expected to cut the trail of two of the very people he'd been tracking.
Could these tracks belong to the Logan brothers?
At first, he thought they might. Dooley had told him they were in Bertrand, but clearly these tracks were fresh. In fact, they were made within the last hour. If they belonged to the Logan brothers, what were they doing out here? Especially if they were holed up in Bertrand. These tracks didn't seem to be going to Bertrand, or at least if they were going there, they sure as hell weren't going there by the most direct route. As a result of having come across the fresh hoof prints, Smoke's journey to Bertrand changed from a normal ride to one of intense tracking. But within an hour after he first came across the trail, he realized with some surprise that they weren't trying to cover up their tracks. On the contrary, it was almost as if they were going out of their way to invite him to come after them.
Why would they do that?
Then, as he contemplated the question, the answer came to him. They wanted him to find him, and they wanted him to find him so they could kill him. They must have been in Dorena while he was there. That meant that they probably knew that he killed Dooley. They probably also knew that he took Dooley's share of the loot. Smoke saw that the trail was leading to a narrow draw just ahead of him. He had never been in this exact spot before, but he had been in dozens of places just like this, and he knew what to expect. He stopped at the mouth of the draw and studied the twists and turns of the constricted canyon. If the two men he was following were going to set up an ambush, this would be the place for them to do it. Smoke pulled his long gun out of the saddle holster, then he started walking into the draw, leading his horse. The draw made a 45-degree turn to the left just in front of him, so he stopped. Right before he got to the turn, he slapped Stormy on the rump and sent him on through. Stormy galloped ahead.
Ford, get ready! I can hear him a-coming!
I see him!
Their bullets whizzed harmlessly over the empty saddle of the horse, raising sparks as they hit the rocky ground, then ricocheting off the opposite wall.
Son of a bitch! Did we get him? We must have got him. I don't think I saw nobody on the horse.
I don't know. I didn't see him go down. Look on the ground. Do you see him anywhere?
No, I don't see him. Where is the son of a bitch?
From his position just around the corner from the turn, Smoke looked toward the sound of the voices, locating one of the two ambushers about a third of the way up the north wall of the canyon. The man was squeezed in between the wall itself and a rock outcropping that provided him with a natural cover.
Fargo, where is he?
Looking on the opposite side of the draw, Smoke saw a shadow there. He smiled. Now he had them both located, and he not only knew where they were, he knew who they were. At least he knew their first names.
Fargo! Ford! I'm right here. If you're looking for me, why don't you two come on down?
You know our names? Hey, Fargo, the son of a bitch knows our names. How does he know our names?
Oh, I know all about you two boys. I know that you robbed the bank back in Etna. I know that you killed the banker.
Weren't us that killed the banker. It was Ebenezer Dooley and Kurt and Trace Logan that done that. We was across the street from the bank.
Ford, will you shut the hell up?
Dooley cheated the rest of you, didn't he? There was $10,000 taken from the bank, but he kept half of it.
How do you know he kept half the money?
Well, now, how do you think I know, Fargo?
You took it, didn't you? You've got the money with you right now.
That's right.
You son of a bitch! By rights, that's our money!
It's not your money! It belongs to anyone who can hold on to it. And right now, I'm holding on to it! You know what I'm gonna do now?
What's that?
I'm gonna take your money!
The hell you are! You might have noticed, mister, there's two of us, and there's only one of you!
All the while Smoke was keeping Fargo engaged in conversation, he was studying the rock face of the wall just behind the outlaw. Then he began firing. Smoke wasn't even trying to aim at Fargo, but he was instead taking advantage of the position in which his would-be assailant had placed himself.
You son of a bitch, quit it! Quit your shooting like that!
As Smoke figured it would be, the ricocheting bullets made Fargo's position untenable, and he stepped out from behind the rock. He raised his rifle to shoot at Smoke, but Smoke fired first.
Fargo?
He's dead, Ford! It's just you and me now!
Smoke watched the spot where he knew Ford was hiding, hoping to see him, but Ford did not show himself. Smoke took a couple of shots, thinking it might force him out as it did Fargo, but he neither saw nor heard anything except the dying echoes of his own gunshots.
Ford! Ford! Are you up there?
Then, unexpectedly, Smoke heard the sound of hoofbeats.
Damn!
He should have realized that they would have their horses on the other side. Ford had slipped away. Smoke started to step around the turn, but then he halted. Ford could have sent his empty horse galloping up the trail just to fool him. looked cautiously around the corner, then saw that his caution, though prudent, was not necessary. It was Ford who was galloping away. Smoke also saw Stormy standing quietly at the far end of the draw. Stormy ducked his head, then came trotting back up the draw towards Smoke. The second horse joined Stormy, and Smoke realized that it must be Fargo's horse. In a saddlebag on Fargo's horse, Smoke found a packet of bills bundled up in a paper wrapper. The name of the bank was printed on the wrapper, along with the notation that the wrapper held $1,000. The bills were so loosely packed within the wrapper that Smoke knew there was considerably less than $1,000, which he knew had been Fargo's share of the take. Smoke put the roll in his saddlebag where he was keeping the money he had taken from Dooley. After that, he led the horse over to Fargo's body.
Sorry to have to do this to you, horse.
Smoke lifted Fargo up and draped him over the saddle.
I know this is none of your doing, but we just can't leave him out here.
Marshal Turnbull, with his chair tipped back and his feet propped up on the railing, was ensconced in his usual place in front of Dunnigan's store. He was rolling a cigarette and paying particular attention to the task at hand when he felt Billy Frakes' hand on his shoulder.
That's one of them.
What?
That's one of the bank robbers. He was one of the fellas that was in front of the Sykes Leather Goods looking at the boots when the bank was robbed.
When Turnbull looked in the direction Billy Frakes had pointed, he saw four people coming toward him. And there were four people, but only three horses. The woman, who he recognized as Sally Jensen, was riding double with Cal, the younger and smaller of the two men who had come to Etna to see about her husband. The fourth person, the one Frakes had pointed out, was riding alone. He also had a rope looped around his neck. And riding next to him, holding on to the other end of the rope, was Pearlie.
Damn, I thought they'd left town.
Turnbull tipped his chair forward and stood up.
Maybe they come to bring back the bank robber.
You sure that fellow with them is one of the bank robbers?
I was standing not more than 20 feet from him when it all happened. I got a good look at him because he wasn't wearing no mask like the other one that went into the bank. But when he was waiting outside and when them bank robbers rode out of town, all of them shooting and such, he was riding along with them, shooting his gun and screaming like a wild Indian.
The riders, seeing Turnbull standing on the porch in front of Dunnigan's store, headed this way.
Miss Jensen? Gents?
Marshal?
Who have you got there?
This man's name is Buford Yancey. Yancey has something to tell you.
Arrest this woman, Marshal.
Yancey held up his little finger, which was covered by a bandage. The bandage was reddish-brown with dried blood on it.
She shot my finger off. You're lucky she didn't shoot something else off. Now tell the marshal what you told us.
I don't know what you're talking about. I ain't got nothing to say.
You sure about that?
Pearlie gave a hard jerk on the rope.
Oh, easy there. You could break my neck messing around like that.
Get down off my horse, Yancey.
Scowling, Yancey got down.
You're gonna tell the marshal what you told us, or I aim to drag you from one end of the street to the other.
All right. I'll talk to him.
You got more to say, Yancey?
I don't reckon I need to say much. The boy here's done said it for me. I wasn't one of them that went inside. Like the boy here said, he seen me standing in front of the store across the street from the bank. I didn't go inside.
What about the others? The ones who did stay inside, who was they?
Yeah, hell yeah. You want to know who they was, I'll tell you. Ain't no need of covering up for them. Them sons of bitches stole my share of the money, and you better believe I don't intend to go to jail while they're wandering around free.
First, Mr. Yancey, tell them who was not with you.
Who was not with me? Oh yeah, I know what you mean. You're talking about Jensen. Jensen wasn't with us. He wasn't no part of the robbing of the bank.
What do you mean he wasn't with you? I saw him. We all saw him. Nobody's likely to miss that shirt he was wearing.
Yeah, well, that was Dooley's idea. We put Kurt Logan's shirt on him, and then we dropped a couple of them paper things that was wrapped around the money by him, and we seen you in the posse when you found him. You took the bait like a rat taking cheese. Dooley's an evil son of a bitch, but he sure is smart.
Dooley. Would that be Ebenezer Dooley?
Yeah, Ebenezer Dooley. He was the one behind it all, and he's the one that stole from me. I tell you true, I hope you catch him.
We don't have to catch him. He's dead.
He's dead? What the hell you say?
Came in by telegram. He was shot by a man named Kirby.
Kirby?
That's the name that was on the telegram. Seems that Dooley shot the deputy sheriff over in Durena. This fella Kirby shot Dooley.
This man Kirby, is he another deputy or something?
Not unless it's someone they put on recently. I never heard of him.
I see.
Come on, Yancey. Oh, and, Mrs. Jansen, you might want to come down to the jail with me.
Why?
Oh, don't worry, I ain't arresting you or nothing. And I got a feeling that there's a reward out on Yancey. Thought you might be interested if there was.
You thought right. Marshal, I would be very interested in it.
Deputy Pike was standing by the stove, pouring himself a cup of coffee when he heard the door open.
You want some coffee?
He stopped in mid-sentence when he saw that Turnbull had a prisoner.
Who's this?
This is one of the bank robbers. Put him in jail.
Yes, sir. Come on, you. We got just a place for you.
Grabbing the key from a wall hook, Pike took the prisoner back to the cell, opened the door, and pushed him in.
Where'd you catch him?
I didn't catch him. She did.
What?
Turning back again, he saw Jensen's wife and the two men who were traveling with her.
You! What are you doing here?
Why, Mr. Pike, aren't you happy to see me?
I'd be happy if I never saw you again.
Don't worry, I won't let her throw you in jail again.
She tricked me!
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Turnbull began going through several circulars, then finding what he was looking for, he held it up for Sally.
I was right. Mr. Yancey's worth $500.
You said something about the town offering $250 as well.
I did say that, didn't I? Mrs. Jensen, looks like you'll be getting out of here with $750. That ought to make you feel a little better about us.
I'll feel much better when you send out telegrams informing everyone that my husband is no longer wanted for bank robbery and murder.
Yes, ma'am. All the lines are open now, so I'll do that right away.
Do you think there was a reward for Ebenezer Dooley?
I'm sure there was.
Good.
Why'd you say good? He's already been killed.
I said good because I'm sure Smoke is the one who killed him.
No, ma'am. I told you it was somebody named Kirby. Wait a minute. Your husband's name is Kirby, isn't it? Kirby Jensen.
Yes.
You really think it was him?
If Smoke was found guilty for something he didn't do, I've no doubt that he is hunting down the bank robbers right now in order to clear his name.
Well, I tell you what, Mrs. Jensen, if your husband is the one who took care of Dooley, and he can have the sheriff of Durena vouch for him, we'll be sending another $250 reward on him as well.
Thank you. When will I get the reward due me?
I'll get a telegram off to Denver today. I figure by tomorrow we'll have authorization back. You should get all your money then.
Hey, Marshal! If you're through talking about how much money you're going to give this woman for shooting my little finger off, maybe you'll get the doctor to come take a look at it.
Looks to me like Mrs. Jensen did a pretty good job of doctoring.
I know my rights. I'm your prisoner. That means I got a right to have a doctor treat me.
All right, I'll get the doc down here for you. I ought to tell you, though, he likes to amputate. More than likely, he'll chop that finger clean off. Maybe even your hand.
What? Never mind. She done a good enough job on me. I won't be needing no doctor.
Didn't think you would.
Pearly, Cal, and Sally left the marshal's office.
You know what, Miss Sally? With your reward money and what we have, there's almost enough money to save Sugarloaf right there.
Yes, there is.
I tell you this, trip back home tomorrow is going to be a lot more joyful than it was when we started out yesterday.
It would be if we were going back home, but we aren't going to Sugarloaf yet.
Where are we going?
We're going to find Smoke.
How are we going to find him? I mean, where will we start?
We'll start in Dorina. First thing tomorrow, after we collect the reward money.
Do you think Smoke is the one who killed Dooley?
I'd bet $1,000 he was.
Sheriff Fawcett was sitting at his desk with a kerosene lantern spread out before him. He was cleaning the mantle when Sally, Pearly, and Cal stepped through the door. Seeing a beautiful woman coming into his office, the sheriff smiled and stood.
Yes, ma'am. There's something I can do for you?
I hope you can help me find my husband.
Is he missing?
Well, not missing in that he's lost. He is missing in that I don't know where he is.
You think he's here in Durena?
I think he has been here. His name is Kirby Jensen, though most people call him Smoke.
Jensen. Jensen. Wait a minute, I just heard something about someone with that name.
He walked over to a table that was up against the wall and started shuffling papers around. He picked up a yellow sheet of the kind that was used for telegrams.
Here it is.
Fawcett read the message. Then his face grew very concerned, and he looked up at Sally.
Did you say Jensen was your husband?
Yes. My name is Sally Jensen.
And you're looking for him?
I am.
Well, evidently, so is every lawman in Colorado. According to this, he's an escaped prisoner, convicted of murder and robbery.
No, he ain't.
Cal, it's all right. What my young friend is trying to say is that the wanted notice has been rescinded.
It's been what?
It has been canceled. Marshal Turnbull, back in Etna, sent out telegrams rescinding the notification that my husband was a wanted man.
Why would he do that?
'Cause Smoke wasn't guilty, that's why.
It seems that one of the bank robbers was caught.
Ha! It wasn't the law that caught him. Tell the sheriff who it was that caught him, Miss Sally.
She caught him. She caught him, and we took him in and got a reward for him.
His name was Buford Yancey.
Yancey. Buford Yancey. Yes, I've heard that name. He's a pretty rough customer, all right.
He ain't so rough now. He's over in Etna, behind bars.
And he has not only confessed to the robbery, he has also confessed that my husband was not involved. The actual bank robbers framed him, so people would think he was guilty.
And you say that word has been sent out to all the law agencies around the state, calling back the wanted notice?
He was supposed to have sent word out by telegraph.
Again, Fawcett began looking through all the papers on his desk. After a moment or two of fruitless search, he shook his head.
I'm sorry. There's nothing here.
What about your telegraph service? Is your line still up?
As far as I know, it is. If you'd like, Mrs. Jensen, we could walk down to the telegraph and check this out.
Yes, thank you. I would like that.
The four walked from the sheriff's office down to the Western Union office.
Can I help you, Sheriff?
Danny, have you got any telegrams you haven't brought down to my office yet?
As a matter of fact, I have. I didn't think there was any rush to it, so I haven't gotten around to it yet.
The telegrapher picked up a message from his desk, then handed it to Sheriff Fawcett. Fawcett read it, then nodded.
You're right, Mrs. Jensen. Your husband's no longer wanted.
Except by me. I have to find him. You see, he doesn't know that he is no longer a wanted man.
I see. And you're afraid of what he might do while he thinks he's wanted?
I'm sure that whatever he does will be justified by the law. For example, I am sure that he killed the man called Ebenezer Dooley right here in your town.
No, that was a man named Kirby. And we have eyewitnesses who say they saw Bill Kirby engage Ebenezer Dooley. In self-defense, I hasten to add. And shoot him down.
Was he a big man with broad shoulders, a narrow waist, blue eyes?
Well, yes, that sounds like him all right.
That's him.
So his name isn't Kirby? Wait a minute, I get it now. He's calling himself Kirby from Kirby Jensen, right?
That's right. Did you say you paid him a reward?
Yes. Dooley had a $500 reward on him.
$750.
No, ma'am, it was only $500.
Dooley was one of the bank robbers. The town of Etna added $250 to the reward.
Mrs. Jensen, if you're asking me to pay the additional $250, I got no authority to do that.
I don't need the money from you, just your verification that my husband is the one who killed Dooley.
Well, I don't know as I could actually...
Is this the man?
Sally was holding an open locket in her hand, and Fawcett leaned down to look at the picture. He studied it for just a moment, then he nodded.
Yes, ma'am, that's him, all right.
You'll write the letter validating that he was the one who killed Dooley?
Yes, ma'am, I'll be glad to do that. I'll do better than that. Danny?
Yes, Sheriff?
Send a telegram to the city marshal in Etna, Colorado. In the message, say that Kirby Jensen is the man who killed Ebenezer Dooley. As this was a justifiable killing, there are no charges against Jensen, and he was paid a reward for bringing Dooley to justice. Then put my name to it.
Yes, sir.
You know, now that I know who you're talking about, I think I might even be able to help you find him. At least, I can tell you where he went from here.
Where?
Bertrand.
How far is it to Bertrand?
Well, there are two ways to go. Some folks go through Diablo Pass because the pass isn't quite as high. But most folks go through McKenzie Pass, which is about 10 miles closer.
Thank you.
After several hours of riding on a bumping, rattling, jerking, and dusty stagecoach, the first view of Bertrand could be quite disconcerting to its passengers, especially to someone who had never seen the town before. Experienced passengers were often called upon to point out the town, for from the top of the pass, it looked like nothing more than a small cluster of the brown hummocks and hills common to this country. 5 years after founding the town, a saloon keeper named John Bertrand was shot down in the street of his own town. The drunken drifter who killed him was lynched within an hour of his foul deed. Now, without the entrepreneurial spirit of its founder, the little town was dying. Bypassed by the railroad and visited by the stagecoach but 2 times per week, its only connection to the outside world was a telegraph wire. And though it was recently re-strung, it had been down for most of the winter. Smoke stopped on a ridge just above the road leading into Bertrand. He watched the stage as it started down from the pass into the town. Then he slapped his legs against the side of his horse and sloped down the long ridge, leading the horse over which Fargo's body had been thrown. Smoke was somewhat farther away from the town than the coach was, but he knew he'd beat it there because he was riding down the side of the ridge, whereas the coach had to stay on the road, which had many cutbacks as it came down the top of the pass. Smoke passed by a sign that read, "Welcome to Bertrand." Behind it, another sign said, "The Jewel of Colorado." Smoke wasn't at all sure that the person who wrote that sign was talking about the same town he was riding into about then. He didn't see much about the little town that would classify it as the Jewel of Colorado. 2 dirt roads formed a cross in the middle of the high desert country. The town consisted of a handful of small shotgun houses and a line of business buildings, all false fronted and none painted. The saloon was partially painted, though, with Lucky Nugget painted in red high on its own false front. As he rode into town, the fact that he was bringing in a corpse caused him to be the center of attention, of course. Several people, seeing him, began to drift down the street with him to see where he was going. Smoke was heading for one particular building, identified by black letters on a whiteboard sign that said,
"Tatum Owens, Sheriff, Bertrand, Colorado."
By the time he reached the front of the sheriff's office, more than 20 people had gathered around. Even the sheriff had come out of his office, summoned by someone who had run ahead to tell him about the strange sight of someone riding into town bringing with him a dead body. Smoke dismounted and tied Fargo's horse to the hitching rail.
"Did you kill him?"
"I did."
"Figure you must think you had a good reason to kill him, otherwise you would have left him."
"Yeah, he was trying to kill me."
"Sounds like reason enough. And if there ain't nobody to back you up, there ain't nobody to hear to say any different. What are you planning on doing with him?"
"I figure the sheriff's office was as good a place as any to leave him."
"Would you happen to know his name?"
"I don't know his last name, but I heard him called Fargo. He robbed a bank in Etna."
Then that would be Fargo Masters."
"How do you know that?"
"The telegraph is up again, and word come through this morning telling about the robbery. It also named the other robbers and put out a reward for $250 for each one of them. So that means you've got money coming if we can prove this is who you say he is."
"What if I show you the money you had on him?"
"You got the money from him?"
"From him and from Ebenezer Dooley."
"Well, you've got the money, I'd say that's pretty good proof."
Having satisfied their curiosity as to who the corpse was, most of the gathered townspeople began moving away. The coach that Smoke had seen several minutes earlier was just arriving in town now, and it pulled to a stop at the stage depot, which was next to the sheriff's office. The door to the coach opened and the passengers stepped outside. One of them glanced over toward the sheriff, then seeing Smoke, smiled broadly.
"Well, Smoke Jensen, what are you doing in here? You're a long way from home, aren't you?"
Smoke knew the passenger only as Charlie. Charlie was a salesman who from time to time had come into Longmont Saloon when he was in Big Rock. Smoke considered pretending that he didn't know what the passenger was talking about, but he decided it would be less noticeable to just respond and get it over with.
"Hello, Charlie. Haven't seen you in a while."
"No, Big Rock isn't my territory anymore. But I sure had me some friends over there. Listen, when you get back over there, you tell Louis Longmont and Sheriff Carson that old Charlie done said hi, will you?"
"Sure, Charlie. I'll do that."
"You're Smoke Jensen? Is your real name Kirby Jensen?"
"Yes."
Oh, then you must have already got the word. Otherwise, you'd still be running.
I've already got the word? Got what word?
Why, that you've been cleared. That message just came in this morning also canceled the wanted notice that went out on you. But since we didn't have a telegraph line through to any place else until just the other day, we wasn't getting much news anyway. I found out that you was wanted and not wanted on the same day.
Well, that's good to know, Sheriff.
So, what are you gonna do now? Go back home?
You say there's a $250 reward for everyone who took part in the robbery.
That's right.
That's good to know. It's also good to know that I don't have to worry about you wanting to lock me up while I go about my business.
What business?
Finding the other bank robbers.
Smoke started toward the saloon, as much to slake his thirst as to find out more information. He tied his horse off in front, then on a whim, he took the plaid shirt out of his saddlebag, and he put it on. Smoke had long had a way of entering a saloon, stepping in through the door, then moving quickly to one side to put his back against the wall as he studied all the patrons. Over the year, he'd made a number of friends, but it seemed that for every friend he'd made an enemy as well. And a lot of those enemies would like nothing better than to kill him if they could. He didn't figure he'd make it easy for them. As Smoke stood there in the saloon with his eyes adjusting to the shadows, he saw one of the men he was looking for. He might not have even noticed him had the man not been wearing the shirt Smoke was wearing when the men jumped him. It was a shirt that Sally had mended when Smoke tore it on a nail in the barn. As Smoke thought about it, he began to get angrier and angrier. He was not only angry with the man for being one of those who framed him, he was angry with the man because the man was wearing a shirt that Sally's own hands had mended and washed. What right did that son of a bitch have to be wearing next to his foul body, something that Sally had touched? The man was talking to a bar girl, and so engaged was he that he noticed neither Smoke's entrance nor his crossing the open floor to step up next to him.
Would you be Kurt or Trace Logan?
Well, I'm Kurt. Do I know you?
Let's just say that's my shirt you're wearing.
What?
For a moment, he was confused. Then, perhaps because Smoke was wearing the very shirt he'd been wearing, he realized who Smoke was. Smoke saw the realization in the man's eyes, though he continued to protest.
What do you mean I'm wearing your shirt? I don't know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. You, your brother, and four others set me up to take the blame for a bank you robbed in Etna. I've already taken care of two of your friends. You and Trace are next. Where's Trace, by the way?
Bartender sent somebody for the sheriff. This man is an escaped convict.
Go ahead. Send somebody for the sheriff. I just left his office. I'd like him to come down here and take charge. According to the sheriff, Kurt Logan is worth $250 to me.
The bartender looked back and forth between the two men, not knowing who the hell to believe.
Dan, this man is Smoke Jensen.
Although Smoke didn't realize it, Charlie, the salesman, had followed him to the saloon from the sheriff's office, and he was now standing just a few feet away.
I've known Mr. Jensen for years, and I'll vouch for him. Now I was just down at the sheriff's office while Jensen and the sheriff were talking. Jensen's telling the truth. This man is lying.
You're crazy.
Where is your brother?
Suddenly, Kurt went for his pistol. Smoke drew his as well, but rather than shooting him, he brought it down hard on the top of his head. Smoke stared at the man on the floor.
Do you have any idea where his brother is?
Yeah, I know. He's upstairs. Like I told you, they've been spending money like it was water. He and this one have been keeping the girls plumb wore out ever since they got here.
Which room is he in?
Well, he's with Becky, so that'll be the second room on the left when he reaches the head of the stairs. And you better watch out for Becky, too. She's some taken with him now, I think. Though, to be truthful, I think it's more his money than it is him.
Thanks.
When Smoke reached the room at the top of the stairs, he stopped in front of the door. He raised his foot, and then kicked it open.
What the hell you mean, barging in here?
Get up and get your clothes on. There's a $250 reward out for you robbing a bank, and I aim to collect it. I'm taking you down to the sheriff.
The hell you are!
Smoke should have been more observant. If he had been, he would have noticed that Trace had a gun in the bed with him. From nowhere, it seemed, a pistol appeared in the outlaw's hand. Trace got off the first shot. Smoke could almost feel the wind as the bullet buzzed by him and slammed into the door frame. Smoke returned fire and saw a black hole suddenly appear in Trace's throat.
Ah! You killed him! You killed him!
Becky picked up the outlaw's gun and pointed it at Smoke. Stepping quickly toward her, he stuck his hand out to grab the gun just as she pulled the trigger again. The hammer snapped painfully against the little web of skin between Smoke's thumb and forefinger. It brought blood, but it didn't hit the firing pin, so the gun didn't go off. Smoke jerked the pistol away from Becky, then threw it through the window. Then, just to make certain there were no other hidden weapons, he picked up one side of the bed and turned it up on its end, dumping Trace's body and the naked bar girl out on the floor. Smoke then left the room. When Smoke reappeared at the top of the stairs, he saw that everyone in the saloon was looking up to see how the drama had played out. They watched in silence as he descended the stairs. Looking toward the floor, he saw that Kurt Logan was gone.
Where'd he go?
I don't know. We was all looking upstairs to see what was going to happen. I reckon he must have left when nobody was paying attention to him.
That's real brotherly love for Kurt to leave and let Trace face me alone. I'll have a beer.
Oh, yes, sir. And it's on the house.
As the bartender took an empty mug down to the beer barrel to fill it, Smoke happened to glance toward the mirror that was behind the bar. That was when he got a quick glimpse of the reflection of Kurt Logan just outside the front window. The outlaw had a gun in his hand, and he appeared to be sneaking up toward the front door. When Smoke leaned over the bar for a better look, he just happened to see the double-barrel 10-gauge sawed-off Greener shotgun that the bartender kept handy. Picking it up, Smoke pulled both hammers back, then turned toward the door just as Kurt Logan came through the bat wings with his pistol in his hand.
You son of a bitch!
Kurt Logan was slammed back against the batwing doors with such force as to tear him off the hinges. He landed on his back at the far end of the boardwalk with his head halfway down the steps, just as Sheriff Owens, drawn by the sound of the first shots, arrived. When Owens came into the saloon, he saw Smoke standing at the bar, still holding the Greener. Twin wisps of smoke curled up from the two barrels. The sheriff looked back through the broken door at the body lying on the porch. Then he stepped up to the bar.
Give me a beer, Dan.
Dan drew the beer, then with shaking hands, he held it toward the sheriff.
Better let me take that before you spill it all. Let me guess, you've just earned yourself another $250.
$500. That's Kurt Logan. His brother Trace is upstairs.
Die, you bastard!
Smoke drew his gun and turned toward the sound.
Hello, Smoke. How have you been?
Sally had a gun in her hand, and she had just used it as a club. Ford DeLorean was lying face down on the floor, unconscious. His right arm was stretched out before him, his fingers wrapped around a pistol. Pearly bent down and took the pistol from Ford's hand. Cal came in right behind Sally and Pearly. And Sally came over quickly to embrace Smoke.
Sheriff Owens, this is my wife, Sally.
Sheriff, I hope you aren't planning on arresting my husband for bank robbery, because I'm here to tell you that he has been cleared.
Yes, ma'am, I know that. I was just telling him the state owes him $750.
Make that $1,000. His name is Ford DeLorean.
I guess that explains why he was planning to shoot you. All right, I stand corrected. The state owes you $1,000.
No, you were right the first time. It's just $750.
What are you talking about? He was one of the bank robbers, and there's a $250 reward for each of them.
I know, but this $250 is mine.
Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man number 34, Betrayal of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by James Lewis, Tim Getman, Drew Kopis, Elizabeth Jernigan, Alyssa Wilmoth, Nick DePinto, Eric Messner, Richard Rowan, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Tim Carlin, M.J. Casey, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Bradley Smith, Thomas Penny, and Johann Detweiler. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and Smoke Jensen theme music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Betrayal of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Bloodbond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. Graphic Audio presents Peter V. Brett's fantasy masterpiece, The Demon Cycle. Book 1, The Warded Man. Experience a world filled with hardship and pain. By day, humanity struggles to carve out an existence in a land that wants nothing more than to see it fall. By night, the broken rabble cowers behind magical wards, its only protection from the relentless bloodthirst of the demon plague. But just as the light threatens to fade away forever, and shadow is poised to shroud all in its wake, three survivors will band together to do battle with the savage horde. Led by a mysterious, fearsome warrior known only as the Warded Man, humanity will wage a bloody war against the creatures of the night. A war that could bring it to the very brink of destruction or capture its final salvation. Don't miss the savage action of The Warded Man, Parts 1 and 2. Coming soon in graphic audio.
Rogue Angel 28, Restless Soul.
War is always the same. It is young men dying in the fullness of their promise. It is trying to kill a man that you do not even know well enough to hate. Therefore, to know war is to know that there is still madness in this world.
Madness! Madness! Hold on!
They will kill us!
Shut up!
We will die!
Everyone dies! but I won't let us die today.
Underground rivers in these mountains. Maybe they are rising because God needs to wash away still more dirt.
Free me!
Up! This is flooding! Anya, Sakharat, come on, move!
Lou, did you hear?
Anya, now! We have to get out of here!
Since you intend to kill me anyway, why not tell me what this is all about? Where did all of the gold come from?
And where is it going?
Yes.
I told you I was educated in America. I grew up on James Bond films. All the villains reveal their plans, lording it over James Bond, who was trussed up to some torture device. He always escaped.
You worry that I'll escape? You've got a gun on me.
I am not a James Bond villain. I am not a villain at all. Just a businessman, an opportunist, who made fortunate alliances so he could make a fortune. I do not need to explain my plans to an archaeologist who stars in a silly television program. And no, I do not worry that you will escape. Now tell me, Anya Creed, where did you go yesterday? Who did you talk to? And where is Lou Ardo?
He's beyond your reach.
God damn you! Where is Lou Ardo? Who have you told about this place? I'll let you live if you cooperate, Anya Creed.
I give up.
No.
Don't shoot anyone. It's me you want.
Dear God, no!
In graphic audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.